Okay, let's go straight to item number four. I'll turn this over to Ms. Kaplan.
I think you'll remember, I guess it was a little over a year ago, a committee from West Covina High School came to the board to talk about the possibility of naming the baseball field after Mr. Okura, who was a teacher in our school district who passed away last year. And what we realized at that time is we did not have any board policy on that, and the board had asked me to write a board policy and bring it to the board, which I did, and was adopted by the board, and gave specific criteria for both the process and for naming a field or a building. And this committee has worked diligently since that meeting. I've attended a few of the meetings. They have really followed every piece of the board item, every requirement from the board policy, and are here tonight to officially make the request that and that I am recommending that we do name the field Michael Okura Memorial Field for West Covina High School. So I'm not sure who from the committee is presenting tonight. Okay, Mr. Rubicon.
Good evening once again. I am here not as the principal of West Covina High School, but as a member of our committee with the presentation in regards to our proposal to rename the field the Michael Okura Memorial Field. So hopefully in front of you, you have a PowerPoint that looks like this. It has three pages, and I will go through it very carefully. So the resolution would be that Michael Okura was a dedicated committed and integral part of the West Covina community for over 50 years. And whereas Michael Okura's commitment to the community began in his youth when, as a citizen of West Covina, he helped raise funds for the original football stadium lights. And whereas Michael Okura was an active and accomplished student athlete in football, baseball, and basketball. And whereas Michael Okura served as an inspirational educator at West Covina High School for 40 years, including an influential role as ASB director, coached football, wrestling, tennis, golf, and baseball, thereby impacting thousands of lives. And whereas Michael Okura is the only coach in West Covina High School history to win back-to-back league baseball championships, and whereas Michael Okura was not only a successful and influential educator, but was also a dedicated husband, father, father-in-law, grandfather, uncle, and friend. Therefore, be it resolved that to honor the memory and legacy of an outstanding educator and mentor, the current West Covina High School baseball field shall be named the Michael Okura Memorial Baseball Field. Therefore, be it resolved that a new scoreboard be purchased and installed to commemorate the naming of the field in Michael Okura's honor. Therefore, be it resolved that a plaque be installed describing who Michael Okura was to deserve this honor. Therefore, be it resolved that a renaming ceremony will be held to dedicate the new name and scoreboard to Michael Okura. Before I go on to the logistics, I want to introduce all of the members of our committee, and I will begin with obviously somebody very, very important, Mrs. Diane Okura. Diane. Obviously, I'm Alex Rulikawa, the principal at West Covina High School. Lindy Loringer, who is daughter, alumna, and teacher at West Covina High School. Lindy. Drew Loringer, who is son-in-law and teacher at West Covina High School, also our baseball coach. Martha Hernandez-Thorne, who is our parent, PTSA president, school site council, and other duties as assigned. Tam Stilgenbauer, community member and alumnus parent. Wendy Lau, alumna. Dr. David Alfaro, alumnus and community member. Ted Moser, English department chair and teacher at West Covina High School. Ms. Melanie Wong, ASB director and teacher at West Covina High School. Mr. Neil Nakano is counseling department chair and counselor at West Covina High School. And Justin Hornsby, who is our student, couldn't be here. This is senior finals week, so he's busy studying, but we should clap for him as well. So some of the community support data that we have, obviously we try to use many different avenues to gather support for the renaming of the field. We did a paper petition with over 300 signatures. I'm going to pass those out in a second. An online petition that was distributed on the West Covina High School website and on a Facebook page. I think at last count, sometime this afternoon, it was over 900 for sure signatures on the electronic version. And of those signatures, 650 alumni, as well as 900 likes on Facebook. I think the numbers are one thing. I think the more important thing are some of the messages that were conveyed through those numbers, and I want to single out three of them in particular that struck me as I went through the paper petitions. Ms. Kim Hillman, very simply put, no one is more deserving. Ms. Carol Dolan, he was a dedicated professional who deserves this honor and distinction. And Ms. Brittany Bernhardt, who I think is back there, awesome teacher and coach, put all of himself in all he did for his students and for his athletes. I want to pass these out because I think it's important to look at all of the comments that people made while filling out the petition in terms of the impact that he had on their lives and on their futures. What you see next is a mock of the athletic of the map at West Covina High School. That's just the athletic part in the back of the school. So you'll notice with one of the arrows where the old location of the scoreboard is, it's kind of on the side of the third baseline. And so the proposed new location would be back behind the field itself, close to the fence line that divides our school from the community, from the actual neighbors. There's a wash and a couple of fences. One is a foul fence for the balls that go over, and about a 5-foot kind of easement between where we are and where the houses begin. There you see a mock-up. Again, thank you to Mr. Drew Loringer, who did both of these. So you see the new location of where the scoreboard would be, again, over in that area back that divides the field from the housing. Two mock-ups of the scoreboards, one in black and one in school colors. Again in black and school colors. Things that I want to emphasize about the scoreboard that we thought were very important, not just making sure that we named the field or named the scoreboard, but that it was very obvious that this was about Michael Okura and that he stood out as one of the big distinctions in terms of the scoreboard itself. Some of the new technology that we've looked at integrating into the scoreboard would be the electronic signboard, similar to the one that we have on the football stadium, and obviously a lot of the bells and whistles that come with all the new scoreboards that we have. So our projected costs are there. They are not small. They are actually pretty substantial. It includes installation, architectural design and approval, DSA approval, all of the panels that you see, as well as moving of power to the new site, architectural design for the new site, including district inspection and district DSA approval of that site as well, and then obviously a plaque and installation of the plaque to commemorate the field itself. In discussing the plaque part in particular, we thought that that was really important to do. I think one of the biggest things that we see now about Thieberg Field is a lot of folks don't know who Thieberg is and ask questions about that. So we thought it would be really valuable to put something in plaque form that would be there for future generations to be able to see, okay, this is the reason why the field was dedicated in Michael Okura's honor. Some of the fundraising ideas that we've come up with and we've thought of, a gala dinner and silent auction, a golf tournament that I guess already occurs through some of our community partners. And so the resources and the fundraising that would be garnered through the golf tournament would be funneled for this purpose. Business, alumni, and community donations. Crowdfunding and online donations. I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with this, but there are a lot of websites out there where you can post a certain project or idea that you want to get funded, and people would log on, and if they want to contribute to that, then they actually contribute money through there. Any money that's generated up to the limit or up to the amount that you're trying to garner would go for that. If we don't hit that goal, then that money would be returned to the people who've made the donations. We looked at a bunch of different sites. One of the biggest concerns that we're obviously looking at is making sure that we maximize the donated dollars. Some of the sites will actually charge a certain percentage for using the service, and we actually, you know, we want to make sure that as much of the money as possible goes for the purpose of the renaming and the scoreboard. And we also wanted to, we're very confident that we're going to get the money that we need, not only that, but actually surpass it pretty substantially. And so any excess or unused funds will be donated to the Michael Kuro Scholarship Fund, which is actually in existence already and is run through our ASB, and they donate scholarships to students every year. Any questions? I am more than happy to answer as many as I can, but I'm also going to call on my colleagues and committee members to answer questions as well.
Okay. Mr. Cox.
Ongoing maintenance, repairs, and utilization be handled out of the site fund?
We've thought about some of those excess funds going to that. The best gauge that we have of those ongoing funds is basically the football scoreboard. Some of the things that we see now that are occurring with the football scoreboard seem to be a lot of problems with communication because the receiver to the scoreboard is wireless, but a lot of those is just a matter of reprogramming, so it's not that much. I'm thinking manpowers would be maybe a few hours every couple of months. In terms of the scoreboard itself, one of the things that we experience with the football scoreboard are the LED panels going out, the light panels, and those range anywhere from $13 to about $30 per each of the little LCD pieces. We're replacing on the average of maybe five every couple of years, so the lifespan is actually pretty good. So it would be minimal, and some of the excess funds would go to offset some of those costs.
But if they funnel all the excess funds into a scholarship fund, will that then taint where that's going to go? Or are you going to fund it out of the scholarship fund, or are you?
It would be a matter of a discussion for the committee, but my assumption would be that we would be able to kind of differentiate some of the dollars, or some of the dollars would be put in an ASB account, maybe for ongoing costs, and then the other dollars would be for the scholarship. I guess the bigger piece is going to be a matter of how much we fundraise in excess of the amount that we're trying to get. Anybody else?
So fundamentally, ASB or site budget would be able to absorb that. If you raise exactly what you anticipated getting, that the ongoing repairs and maintenance would be relatively minimal.
That's what we're experiencing with the football scoreboard. Yeah.
So it sounds like you'll be able to do it out of the site budget.
Yes, I'm pretty confident that we can do that.
Ms. Boulos.
Life expectancy. This is a wonderful proposal. I mean, every time I see anything, how much Mike did for the community, I'm awestruck. But seeing how much work went into the proposal, this is wonderful. What's the life expectancy of the scoreboard itself?
That's not a question that we looked into in terms of this particular model. I can share that the existing scoreboard that's there now has been there in excess of 10 to 15 years?
Something like that.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so it's even longer than that. So possibly going up to 20 years.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that we're expecting the life of this one to be, if not equal to more than that one. And that one's actually still going relatively strong. I think we just replaced a $13 piece the other day, and it's working back to normal. So.
Well, it's because it was from Andrew High School.
That's it.
Well, the reason I ask is, there was some beautiful memorials in the past that people didn't realize what happened. Let's just talk about the Rose Garden. I know that wasn't a piece of equipment, but it got mowed down at Edgewood High School. We want to make sure when this kind of effort goes in, that it's going to be something that's able to be sustained. So if that, I'm sure they want this to last forever, because there's going to be grandchildren that were affected by Mr. Okura, and so they can keep the memory alive. That looks like what they're trying to do here. If something happens to the scoreboard, is it going to be replaced with something similar with his name on it?
I don't think that's something that we considered, but I believe that in the board policy it states that there's actually a term limit to the
short-term and long-term,
to the to
10
the
years
amount.
Or 40 years.
Yeah.
But 40 years,
yeah.
Do you think that the scoreboard is going to last 40 years?
I would doubt that it was going to be 40 years. I'm looking at possibly a similar lifespan to the one that we have now, maybe 20 years plus if we're lucky with good maintenance. Yeah.
And then is this a short term or is this considered a long term? So then that would be something that we would have to
change. I mean, I assume you're requesting a long term.
We're requesting the long term just so that we can expect to be able to have it for that amount of time. Any issues that come up can be addressed at that time, if more funding or any of that comes up.
Right. And it would be the same. And how does the group that a scout is looking after it now, does it stay intact? And then how does that change over time?
I'm not sure. I can safely say that most of our staff members will probably be here in another 20 years. So I'm pretty sure they'll be willing to serve on the committee.
Yeah, they don't usually disappear or anything.
The staff?
No, the scoreboard.
Oh, no.
The scoreboard.
I know, but if something happened to it, we wouldn't want it just to be replaced with nothing.
Okay.
If the group wanted to continue this and it's the long term for 40 years, then we want the possibility for that to continue for a 40-year memorial. And if it only lasts 20 years, what's going to happen? Because that really hurts people when, with all this effort you put in, you would want it to be established for the 40 years. Right.
And I
believe that. I just wanted to make sure going into it that it was the 40 years and that there's a good chance that something would happen to that scoreboard, but it's the long range.
And it's a great question, and in all honesty, it wasn't something that we had addressed in terms of the longevity of our commitment to the committee. Our goal and our commitment was to get the proposal in place, get it established, fundraise, put it in place, and then I guess at that point we would have a discussion about what our role as a committee would be ongoing from there.
Because I would just hate to see what happened to the roses. I mean, they were beautiful roses, and I know they meant a lot to people, and then to have them torn down and put asphalt on them. A group that was really hurt, and we just want to make sure that doesn't happen, and we take precautions beforehand.
Thank you, Ms. Phillips. Mr. Spence.
Is the vehicle going to be the scholarship fund for raising this money? Is it going to be the same fund? It's going to be a separate thing? Okay. Is that already set up, or?
No, we haven't set up any fundraising. We were looking for approval from, obviously, you first. We've looked at a bunch of different ways of raising resources. Obviously, some of our alumni would be more comfortable going directly through ASB and making donations in name of the field to ASB, where they would set up an account through their current bookkeeping process specifically for this purpose. We were looking at also the crowdsourcing
right,
online
yeah.
ways, and so I think different avenues, all of them.
I ask because I know some people that I think would donate, so that's why I was asking. So when you have the vehicle, let me know, is what I'm saying. That's why. When you have with the vehicle.
I asked them to wait until after to make sure it was approved.
I know some people that I think would donate. So that's why I was asking, not to see if that was already set up or not.
Neil?
To kind of help you out also, if you wanted to pass along, have them go to the high school website. There's still a link to the online petition. And if your friends would like to submit their petition on there, it'll ask them for their contact information. And when we start doing fundraising, we'll make sure that they get a letter, email.
Well, I'll make sure they give, so. So just let me know, okay? Let me know. My only comments on this are I am disappointed you didn't include he attended UCLA. I also was pleased when this first came up. I remember talking to someone that I thought a scholarship component needed to be part of this because Mr. Kerr was more than just, an athletic, coach. And a lot of people that I've talked to or talked to me, there are people that they touched in the classroom. I thought that was a very important part of it, so I'm glad to see that that's part of this. I know when every year in December, our family, we go off somewhere away from everybody for Christmas for a couple weeks, and during that time, I remember in 2010, I had tried to prove that I wasn't old and I could hit a ball around the bases without hurting myself, and I did hurt myself, so I was laid up. But I went over, you know, all the things, you know, on school board, you always wonder, am I even making a difference? You know, this stuff's crazy, and, you know, the last 5-6 years have been kind of crazy. And but in 2010, I look back and I go, look, you know, 2010, I know my vote mattered and made a difference because it allowed Mr. Kura to be in the classroom and to impact another group of kids. And so I can't think of anything better than honoring him in both these ways, the scholarship and the athletic component that he brought to a lot of kids' lives. So I don't know if we're going to move it. We move it now? Or do
well,
you want to say something?
I was very happy to see this come back. I had no doubt that it would, and some of the names who are involved are ones that I know and I trust. The two comments that I have on the business side of this is, one, before you do the installation of the scoreboard, somebody should probably check with the city to make sure it's not too close to property lines.
I think you
there
did.
May be a reason it was where it was located.
We had David Larkin walk the field with us, and actually the installer from the company for the scoreboard, and we took those some of those considerations in mind, and so there's some research ongoing.
Okay.
So we have a couple of different scenarios in case one of them doesn't go just right.
Okay, perfect. And then I would like, tonight we're just approving the renaming of the baseball field and the new scoreboard. I'm assuming that since this is going to be a whole dedication, that when we iron out the agreement, that some of the issues raised by Ms. Polis are addressed, such as, you know, if something happens to the scoreboard, who's responsible, who will be the ongoing contact person, the duties of the committee to let us know if that changes. I have no doubt that Lindy is going to be here for the next 20 years. Yeah, she's been here as long as I have. So. But just in case, for some reason, the people move away, people decide, I don't want to be the forefront of this. And that way, we ensure that 40 years from now, the field is still clearly dedicated to Mr. Akura.
And if approved, our hope is that we're going to be invited back so we can give updates on the progress and kind of some of the steps that we've already established, some of the goals and benchmarks that we've reached in terms of funding and selecting the scoreboard and doing all of that. So.
With that, I will move approval
I want to commend the committee. And it's so good to see some of the faces back in the audience who worked really tirelessly to put this together, who were part of the effort in 2010. So it really shows the commitment to a teacher who was just one of a kind. I didn't have the pleasure of sitting in a classroom. I didn't know Mr. Okura until 2010. And I remember talking to him on the phone and telling him, you remind me of a great teacher I had, which was Mr. Escalante. And he said he was very humbled by the comparison. And the more and more I see and hear, they were great men together. Great men, and they do belong in the same conversation together. So I am so happy to see this come to fruition. I am thrilled that it was a community organic effort, and I'm going to be voting yes on this. My preference personally would be that whatever money is left over, that it be kept aside to maintain the school the board, because I do want to see it last the 40 years. I want to be able to tell my kids about this amazing man who they do know about who this amazing man is, but unfortunately we'll never get the opportunity to have him. So I commend all of you. Thank you so much for bringing this, for keeping it going, and I can't wait till the opening ceremony. So thank you. So, okay. I will go ahead and move this. Who will second this?
I will second it.
Okay.
I already moved.
It was moved.
Okay.
No,
then
I tried to move it earlier.
I'm sorry?
It doesn't matter.
Okay. So Ms. Shoemaker moved it. I will second it then. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? It carries 5-0. We'll take a 5-minute break. Hello, if our board members can find their seats. Okay, we're going to go ahead and reconvene, and we are now to the section in our agenda. So I'm super excited about this. This is a dream fulfilled. The strategic plan. I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Kaplan.
Thank you.
My dream.
Well, this has been a long process, and I'm not going to go into much detail over it. You can do it for me. This started last year. We met with several focus groups, parents, students, teachers, administrators, and the board, and really asked the question of our kindergartens of last year of 2011, what do they need to have, what qualities, what skills, what kind of information, what characteristics do they need to be successful graduates of 2020? And if you look at this list, I just wanted to put this up here because as we go into our action plans and our objectives and goals, so many of these qualities are embedded in our strategic plan. Problem solvers and critical thinkers, inquisitive and curious to continue learning, community and civic responsibility, culturally aware, adaptable, self-aware of strengths and weaknesses. So this is where it all started, was really with these concepts. From that, with the board, we developed a vision statement and a mission statement, and through both the vision and mission statement, certain things just kept coming up. Citizenship, post-secondary and career participation, critical thinking and problem solving, informational literacy, positive contributions to society, and most importantly, that all students would have access to a high-quality, well-rounded curriculum, rich in meaning and rigor that inspires. And again, if you look at our action plan and our objectives, they all relate back to our vision and mission statement. What was also a very important part of our development of a strategic plan is to really define what our core values were and what our belief statements were, because this has to be something that we share. It's fundamentally that we share this, and that this would really determine how we behave and how we interact as a district, and also when we make decisions, to go back to these core values and beliefs and make sure that there's alignment. Out of all this, what is our goal with the strategic plan? And the goal really doesn't change. The goal is really the same goal that this district had when I first came to the district, that all students will meet or exceed district, state, and federal accountability standards. And out of this, we came up with five focus areas. One was literacy, writing, technology, active citizenship, and STEM, and then also one on business budgeting so that we could develop funds that would support this. So these strategic focus areas is kind of where we left off last year, with the goal of bringing in our community, teachers, administrators, to help define how we're going to get there. The goal of student achievement remains the same. What is changing in our state is that the measurements are going to be very different. The California assessment will be very different. We'll be moving into the smarter balance, and we don't know what that looks like yet. And so we often, in our administrative meetings, talk about building a plane while we're flying it. We're not sure what those accountability standards are going to be, but we're building this plane or the strategic plan to get us there. Not quite sure what that assessment's going to look like. So I think it's important for the board to recognize that in transition, the assessment that we're using right now is not the way we're supposed to be teaching, and there is going to be a gap in a period of time. And so we're not sure what's going to happen with our smarter balance. So what we did is come up with a lot of other measurements to look at as well. And in the notebook that I gave you baseline data on those measurements so that we could also be looking at academic proficiency. We could look at attendance rates, college placement exam participation, AP, IB course enrollment and performance, post-secondary enrollment, and many other things, because in this transition, we're going to be having to look at other measures, not just scores on a state or state test. So basically, this particular slide just kind of is a review of where we started and where we are tonight. And where we are tonight is to bring this strategic plan that you've had for a couple of weeks to look at and to talk about the action plans. We're not going to get specific into each action. This was work done by over 100 people, and it's our best thinking. As we really looked at developing these action plans, we had to spend a lot of time learning about the core standards, learning about the new science, new generation science standards. We needed to really define what academic rigor was. We really needed to look at depth of knowledge and where we're trying to get kids to be. We needed to look at 21st century learning skills. So we had to define all of these things so we could then come back and write the action plan to go along with it. So what we're going to do tonight is we're going to go over each action plan. We're just going to summarize what they say. You've had it for a few weeks if you have specific questions about it. And we've asked people who participated on the committees to come and help us. And I'm going to move ahead to technology because we have a young lady that needs to go home. And we're going to start with our focus three on strengthening the ability and set. Well, I'm going to let our facilitators come.
I really had the great pleasure of working with the committee on technology, and I've asked a few of those members to be with me tonight, Michelle and Shannon and Michael, if you'll come up. We agreed on five objectives, and they're going to tell you a little bit about the objectives. The overarching themes in technology came out early in one of the meetings. They want more power, more bandwidth, more speed, and more devices. But they also realized there were other things that we needed to work toward, too. So if we can start with Michelle.
Hello. I had the first objective I'm going to go over. It's all teachers will demonstrate effective use of digital tools to support student learning. And really what that involves or entails is technology expectations for teachers are aligned to student expectations as well as the Common Core state standards that are coming down the line. Teachers' training should be tailored to current teacher needs as well as grade level needs, because they'll both be different based on their grade level. They'll have different levels of expertise needed. And professional development to benefit the teacher's skill level and enhancing their ability to integrate technology. Really the key theme is the teacher's ability level and working for that level, because everyone's different. Some are advanced, some are not. And so really working with those teachers to find that level.
Hi, okay. Objective number two states that all students will use digital tools to acquire skills and knowledge in order to demonstrate student learning. Because the Common Core standards, they integrate technology into both the math and the literacy standards are integrated, we really want to design the expectations for the students so that technology is kind of part of their everyday life at school. It's something they're comfortable with. When we start the Smarter Balance assessments, they're comfortable with it. They know what the expectations are, and they really can kind of excel and show what they know and that the technology isn't a hindrance to them. The third objective we have is teachers and students will utilize individualized software apps to support the unique learning needs and interests of individuals. So what we wanted to do was the committee wanted to come up with kind of a warehouse of all these different apps that would be appropriate for our teachers to use in their classrooms, not only so that they could individualize instruction for the students, but also so they could use it as a tool to communicate with the parents more effectively, increase school-home communication, and we'd also offer workshops for the parents so that they could learn the software themselves and be more comfortable with it. And probably the most exciting part is that we were considering expanding to web-based professional development for the teachers so it can be more tailored to fit the needs of all the different levels that the teachers are at with their technology.
Objective number four, the district will provide student access to technology aligned to Common Core state standards and Smarter Balance Assessment Consortium. The action towards meeting this objective are focused on building an infrastructure that will meet our needs now, but more importantly, we'll have capacity and ability to expand as use of individual data devices increase. As data tools become the workplace and learning place norm, our job is to constantly expand capacity, access, and speed of the student and teacher user. Objective five, district will maintain and update infrastructure to support the current and future needs. The committee members understand the value and the risk of having access to all the potential resources that are available through the internet. The best risk management is a combination of filtering, monitoring, and education. The diligent teaching of online safety and appropriate use is critical as the development of policies to keep pace with developing technologies.
Questions, or did you want to ask questions?
Are they going to be leaving?
Michael, are you staying? Oh, okay.
Okay. Then we can go through it all. Do you need to go?
I could. Yeah.
Go ahead. You already ahead. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Sweet dream.
Strategic focus number one, rigorous, well-rounded, and Tandy Taylor was the facilitator of this.
Good evening. As part of the strategy, provide a comprehensive, well-rounded, rigorous educational experiences to all students. There are really two focuses, both literacy and writing. I'm going to turn the time over to Helen Jewell and Paige Ramos, who are going to go over the objectives for literacy.
The actions in the first objective focus on the instructional practice of the teacher. The community recognized there is a shift in how the students will need to be taught in order to be prepared for the 21st century. Common Core literacy will focus on higher level thinking, application of new learning, and creativity. Included in the plan are identified research-based instructional strategies aligned to the expectations for Common Core state standards. To support instruction, which will require students to go deeper, and realignment of pacing, benchmarks, and report cards will support the new expectations.
Objective number two is about students, and the committee believed that it was important to include how the students would be engaged with their learning, and with a shift in instructional practice, it's recognized that the way that the students are demonstrating their proficiency will be changing as well. Students will be needing time to practice for listening, speaking, reading, and writing activities. And through hands-on, project-based learning, students will be able to participate in educational opportunities to prepare them to learn and work in the 21st century.
For Objective 3, the committee recognized the need to provide high-quality professional development tailored to teachers' current skills and knowledge. This includes training in a wide variety of areas, including curriculum and instructional strategies. Additionally, the committee felt the need to promote teacher leaders as a support to the district and site's action plans. Professional learning communities will be a foundational practice to increase professional practice.
And in the committee, we know that parents are foundational to the success of their child's education. And by working in concert with the parents and families, students will be best served. We had some areas of focus, including parent education, on the instructional shifts that are happening, and the student expectations for literacy that's changing. Additionally, parent classes will be offered on curriculum and technology to support them as partners in this process.
The second focus of the comprehensive, well-rounded, rigorous educational experiences also is our focus too, which is all students will be proficient writers in all content areas. As Debbie said, as we've been building this airplane as we're flying it, and so with the writing component and this focus is that we had already identified this and had started that ball rolling with the thinking maps, and we have been working on it for the past year. Knowing the importance of writing to Common Core, we felt it was necessary, though, to have its own focus and its own objectives. In August, this coming August, we'll begin our rollout of the implementation of Write for the Beginning for K through 8, in which also high schools will be following shortly thereafter in a district-wide writing program. As it states, all students, it is the expectation that they will be proficient writers in all content areas, and we'll do this through a significant amount of professional development, support, and monitoring and follow-up in order to get that goal achieved.
Was the lucky one where she facilitated two committees, so I had two favorite committees. The second committee that I really had the pleasure of facilitating was Active Citizenship, and with me tonight are Josefina Steinmetz and Ellen Bezer, who are going to share a little bit about that committee. Overarching themes that came out of our discussions were to build upon some great practices that are in place at some grade levels or some schools. During the discussion, many teachers shared particular practices or traditions that have gone on at their schools. And one of the things that we found is, wow, if we could just have this at every single school, our overall program would be so much improved. And so I'm going to ask Ellen first to speak, and then Josefina.
Excuse me. Thank you. Thank you very much. Our first objective was, as you see up there, teachers will implement instruction that supports learning in all the disciplines within social studies. And this is government law, democracy, history, economics, and it would be, you know, because the kindergartners don't do government, democracy, or law, more history, and it would be at their level and basically community and school-wide where they could relate to what's going on. But then at the same time, even in elementary school, you have the sixth graders that learn about ancient history, so they could begin the foundations of government. So that's where we would use, or that's where that standard would be used. Teachers will incorporate local, national, global, and controversial issues into instruction, and we will look at what's going on in the world nationally, locally, globally, and then, depending on the age level, grade level, work with our students and help them with reading, writing. We would use more, we would have to get more original source documents, which is something that not a lot of us do right now. I know some teachers do in different grade levels, but we would make that more across the grade levels in all schools. Students will learn from and about different perspectives and how to approach problems with a creative mindset. So as stated earlier, they'll use they will have to do more reading, writing. We'll also be using more creative thinking in this area so that the students will become better citizens, understand what it is to continue on from elementary school to high school and then beyond.
and then we have objective number four, which is students will have opportunities to learn and practice active citizenship. I think for the committee, it was very important to ensure that we included the word active to, well, make sure to incorporate real-world experiences for the students and make sure they have opportunities to apply what they have learned in the classroom. Then objective number five would be schools-linked opportunities that provide students to engage personally and collaboratively in ways that contribute positively to others, their school, community, state, nation, and world. I think it was very important to us to make sure we broaden students' vision of the world and to make sure we expand their capacity to work with a huge diversity of people.
And finally, the strategic focus develops science, technology, engineering, and math STEM programs and practices to facilitate greater preparation for post-secondary achievement. Again, in each committee, we had each school represented, elementary, middle school, and high school. So we have Laura, who's going to be one of our elementary participants, from Orangewood, Mario from Hollandcrest, middle school assistant principal, and Lisa from the high school, and they're going to share the work that this committee did.
Guess I'll go first. Number one, if you look out there, it talks about rigorous high quality. And the issue becomes that with Common Core and the next generation science standards, we need to look at where we're at. A lot of that, it has to do with kind of the instructional gap. Where are we at and what do we need to do? So that requires a lot of, looking at our current pacing guides. Are they up to par? Making sure we get professional development for our teachers. The thing with science in K-8, teachers feel uncomfortable with it because they're not used to it. They're not experts in it. So teaching our teachers how to teach concepts in STEM. Number two, students will demonstrate knowledge of applying 21st century skills. Well, this is huge. As you know, as you've heard, STEM jobs are on the increase, but also our students going into science and math background in college, they're far fewer than before. So how do we prepare our kids? Well, one is by making them active learners. As you've heard, every single kind of strategic focus here is being active learners, being part of the learning process. So that's number one. Also looking at how to apply and how to create things. Some of you, if you're familiar with our STEM, with our GATE exhibition, project-based learning, that's kind of what we want kids to do. Not only regurgitate the information, but also communicate, articulate, present, create new information.
All right, I've got three and four. I made some notes just so I wouldn't go on and on because STEM is very exciting to me. Objective three has to do with expanding course offerings, rigorous enrollment, and higher level math and science classes. So considerations for that include articulation and consideration of rigor in all levels, K through 12. Student interest, of course, is an issue. Talking about STEM offerings that support career pathways and students interested in vocational programs. And then also increasing AP and IB offerings at the high schools. I know we're just talking about now about adding an AP computer science class, and it's interesting for me to be a part of this, just getting a new AP class off the ground in terms of preparing, who's going to teach that class and how's that person going to be prepared to meet the needs of those students. It's a very unique challenge, and it's something that's a consideration for this focus. And then objective four is establishing higher education and industry partnerships that create opportunities for students to experience how STEM applies in the real world. So a lot of that has to do with researching and identifying partnerships, creating relationships with other districts to share information, surveying stakeholders in terms of what's available. One of the interesting things about all these people coming together is we all have resources, and we're not aware of what the other resources are. And I think when we all come together, we realize that we're all pretty connected in the community in the larger Los Angeles area, so we really can bring some great things to our kids. The last thing I wanted to share that doesn't have to do with this is this process was really unique for me. I've never been a part of a process like this, and it was a really diverse group of people coming together with a clean slate, and after a few very strategically focused meetings, we came out with this product, and we can each see our imprint on it, and we're all very proud of it. So that was kind of a unique thing, and I appreciated being a part of it.
And finally, objective 5, which is about increasing parent involvement and understanding of STEM education. And to support this objective, school sites will provide parent workshops on STEM. They will host STEM nights to show student projects, and they will also use social media for parent outreach. We consider that having parents involved and being aware of what is going on is extremely important to the success of students. Finally, I enjoyed being a part of the STEM committee as it provided me with my first opportunity to participate in a district committee and work collaboratively with colleagues in a team led by Ms. Kaplan. It was a true honor to be led by her. She is truly rigor, practices what she preaches, and gave us the opportunity to generate, share, and discuss ideas. And I think that we enthusiastically prepared a plan for our students to develop critical thinking skills as they embrace STEM education to create a better world.
So I'm sure you're hearing some common themes. I think what was really interesting about our committees is they work separately. As facilitators, we went to all the other committees and wanted to listen and hear what was going on in all the committees. Again, Tandy, Ellie, and myself facilitated these committees, but the work was done by the members. So when we got done and we kind of looked at everything and thought, felt a little bit overwhelmed because this is a lot of work to do, we found that there were some really common themes in all of them. One, the common core state standards. You know, some districts are saying, what are we doing to implement the Common Core? I think what we're saying is these are really important goals that we have for our kids. How can the Common Core support us meeting those goals? So the Common Core is a tool. It's not the end all. Smarter balance assessment. We had to spend a lot of time looking at the assessments, and we realized that these assessments are going to ask kids to not bubble in, but to apply information. Many times they're going to be 3- and 4-step questions. And throughout all of the committees, we had to look at what these kinds of questions would be so we could have a vision of where we want to get our students. The 21st century skills was embedded in every single committee. Again, increasing teacher content and teaching knowledge. We talked about science and math. Sometimes at the elementary level, you're not an expert in science and math. And if you're going to do project-based learning, you really have to understand what you want kids to get out of it and how they're going to succeed. So a lot of our staff development also needs to be in content. And that moves us to professional development. Every single committee really wants professional development, but they're identifying the kind of professional development they need to be successful. We also realize that what we're doing with lesson study is going to be a major resource to all of our schools, because lesson study really helps teachers look at a lesson, identify what student outcomes should be, and collect data. So as we move to more project-based learning, we can use that lesson study model to really help each other really look at a lesson and make sure we're doing what needs to be done for kids. Collaboration time was big in all of the committees, and you got something in your packet on Thursday in terms of collaboration time to make sure that we have time for teachers if they can't do this by themselves. We learned through this committee process how valuable it was get bringing teachers together from different perspectives to develop these themes and these action plans. Literally, we were facilitators. We gave them the information. We provided them with questions. But everything that you see is what they developed. And the loud conversation in the room, you know, was just very exciting and electrifying for all of us. Technology for teaching and learning, major in every single one of these action plans. Rigorous instructional program. What is rigor? Trying to identify what that looks like in an academic setting. And then again, parent education, that has to be across the board. Anything that we're doing in the district has to be something that parents understand, can embrace, and be a part of. For example, with STEM, it was how can we research what parents we have in the community who have STEM backgrounds who can come and be resources to our schools as well. So it was very, these themes are throughout and will be looked at in different perspectives. So what are our next steps? I mean, obviously, bringing it to the board, getting your input. We want to share and communicate with teachers and parents at all schools. Some of our principals have already started having these conversations at the school site. One of the things that we asked for our teacher participants was every their school site, what we were doing, what was happening, and to get input. I just was at Buena Vista today, and the principal was sharing with me a PowerPoint for active citizenship that when the teachers finished being on the committee, went back and actually made a PowerPoint. And all of our participants, in some way or another, used this time in their meetings at school sites to talk about it. The next big step, you have a big folder, a big notebook, but it's not full. And if you see in the back that there is every single school is mentioned and department. So the next goal is that when schools develop their goals next year, they look at this action plan, and each school is different. Like, we differentiate with kids, we need to differentiate in terms of where our schools are. So our schools will be developing an action plan to support the strategic plan based on where their school is. That will be sent to you to put in the notebook, and then at the end of the year, as they evaluate where they've been on and what they've accomplished, that will be sent to you as well, and this will be ongoing from year to year. And we'll, at the end of every year, we'll go back and reflect on what we've accomplished and what we need to do again. I just want to really stress, this is a roadmap. It's our best thinking, but when we jump in and get into this and move it around, we may have to move some things around because we might find that there are other things we need to do first, or there are things that are coming faster. We might get a grant and actually go faster in something. So it's a moving target, but it gives us focus and where we want to go. And then the next is to work with our assistant superintendent of business, like, where's the money? We've got to find money to support all of these initiatives because but what we're saying is we need to focus on them, and whenever we want to spend money, we need to look at our strategic plan and see, does this support our strategic plan? Questions? We're all here to answer.
Thank you so much. Mr. Cox.
No, you just caught me in the middle, so I just exaggerated a little bit. Lisa.
Yes, sir.
How many years ago? No, sit down. How many years ago did a lovely young lady stand at Monta Vista School with a big old fish tank and a gazillion, what, were they trout or whatever it was? I'm sorry.
Yeah, but they never ate them.
Yeah, so we've so we've come a long way, and I want to share just a little bit of something with you, and I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Laura.
Dolores.
Laura,
sorry. This whole process is, how could I say, something that I'm not particularly comfortable with doing and being a part of, and that. So when I was asked to be part of the strategic planning committee for the West Covina Rotary Club, Rotary Club of West Covina, and had to sit there with Debbie Kaplan on this committee, you know, and fighting the process the whole way through, but going through the process. I mean, look at it. Compared to what you all have done, it's a teeny little, tiny little process, but it took us weeks and weeks and weeks of meeting constantly and sharing and collaborating and going through this whole process. So I do have an appreciation for all that you all have done. And I do appreciate the impact that Debbie's had with respect to the movement of moving this forward, and I definitely appreciate that. And I don't know if it's coincidence or what, but tomorrow at noon at the Rotary Club, we're going to be presenting the strategic plan for the Rotary Club of West Covina. So I've definitely got an idea about what it is and where we're going with this sort of thing. And so I appreciate this. Appreciate all the work that you've done. And, you know, I do know how actually I did come around. And, you know, and no matter what she tells you, don't believe it. If she says anything about how this process affected me going forward, don't believe it. But it is good, and I appreciate this is where we're going, and I like this idea that, especially I like this idea of each of the schools now taking this as a guideline, taking this as a process, and moving forward and developing their plans as a tool for their success. Thank you.
Ms. Poulos.
Many organizations that I've been in have done strategic plans, and I find when you use them, they're very helpful. To look and say, is this really where we decided we wanted to go, and are we working towards that? I'm glad you said that we're going to be getting harder numbers on the budget, because we need to know reality. What is it going to cost? And when we're planning for the next 6 years, what do we need to make this work? Because they're great ideas, but we need to have the money to do it. So I hear that that's going to be one of the next steps. When do you expect that to be done?
Well, that's ongoing. As we develop the work each year, we allocate funds towards it. What I will say, we also are looking at grants. And we brought a grant to you, Innovation 3 grant, for over $3 million, I believe, and we're trying to write a grant for STEM. So it's not just what we're getting from our budget and from the state, but we're really looking STEM right now. Many of these things are on the cutting edge, and there are a lot of grants out there, so we're very actively looking for grants to support this. So, we anticipate it coming from a variety of directions, but I think the goal is that as a district, we say this is important. The other thing is, with the governor's budget, there is about $1.7 million that was just dedicated for CORE, which is our strategic plan. So I think we have to look for creative ways of not just looking at our district budget, but how we can support these initiatives through other monies as well and other partnerships.
One organization I was with, we had the hard numbers on there. So then when we wrote our grants, we already knew what it was, and this wasn't one of the things, but what it would cost for every child to have a laptop or every child to have an iPad. What we want them to have, we had the hard numbers. And then they did change. We had to look at it periodically. But then we could just put it into that grant, you know, because sometimes there was a short time to get the grants out. But if you already had all that information done, and how much training does it take to have the teachers use the apps? And I know when we went to digital high school, we had people who had never turned on a computer to people who couldn't live without a computer. So the training for the people just to learn how to actually access email was very difficult to move them forward to actually posting their grade books on. So I know that we had somebody talk about that tech piece and how that would work. If we could actually try to figure out where everybody is and how much training that would take.
And that's part, as you'll see, the strategic plan, action plan for next year. Some of those, we now look at this plan, and some of the things will be identifying those things, kind of putting things in priority. So we already have, these committees are going to be ongoing, and some of the work that they're going to be doing next year will be that first year looking at some of these issues that you're raising.
And now this is the first year where technology has been really big, where I've actually had a child in school. Being able to go online and check how they did on their AR test is amazing. I mean, you can go, and it's not always on that day, but I could go on the next week and I could find out how well did she perform. You know, and I can't tell where she went wrong, but I could go and ask the teacher, what could I do? And her teacher's really special, but sends texts of pictures with a little caption about what they did that day. And then I can generate a conversation about, because how often do you ask your child, what did you do at school? Mm. Nothing, or it was the same. But if you have something and you could show them, look, I got this picture of you and the life cycle of a butterfly, or, you know, the caterpillar. Can you explain it to me? This looks really exciting. It's a great way to get the parent involvement, so I know we're starting to do that, but there's so much potential with that. So I appreciate all the work that everybody put into this. I would really like to see some harder numbers, which I think we're going to be getting soon. And just getting the STEM, people excited about the STEM. I'm really glad we got that as one of the points of interest here. And to find out what parents are already out there, or community members that are already vested in it, to come and share with our kids. I mean, that won't cost us anything. And I think that they would be really excited to share with us. So I'm excited that we have a plan, that we can stick to it, and I know it won't get dusty with this kind of excitement from all of you. And I appreciate all the work that already went into it.
Mr. Spence.
Well, I appreciate the work staff put into it, too. This is the most comprehensive strategic plan I've seen on the board. I remember my first year on the board having an argument over whether the goal should be that all kids can achieve grade level. And so,
a long way, exactly,
a long way from that. You know, I think, you know, obviously the budget stuff and all the particulars and stuff need to be superimposed, but I think also we have to look at our the ways we hire personnel to make sure that the personnel coming in don't need to be trained on how to turn on the computer, which was one of my first jobs in the school district when I was 15 and a half, and I was the computer consultant because I would turn them on in the morning so the staff could come in during the summer and, you know, try to learn how to use them. So I think we have to look at, you know, how we apply some of what we're trying to do here with the people we're hiring. And I'm not sure the way we currently do it, you know, every one of our, I always joke, every one of our things says that you have to lift 25 pounds. You know, and that's great that you have to lift 25 pounds to work in West Community Unified. But at the same time, you know, what basic computer skills do you have? What kind of technology skills do you have? Do you have, you know, what kind of science skills do you have? And I think the other component that's in here that I like that's, I think, underutilized is the whole aspect of parents. Because I know, you know, my son will say, how does the internet work? Well, you hit send and you say a magic word and it appears over there, you know, and, you know, because we're not, you know, I took an electric typewriter to school, you know, so it was the best one ever. But, you know, so, you know, things have radically changed, you know, and I know when kids, you know, that are 8, 9, 10 start coming home from school and you're going, I don't know, I thought there were only 4 food groups, what? You know, when did that happen? And, you know, it's trying to make sure that parents understand enough so they feel comfortable helping their kids, you know, when kids are having trouble outside of the classroom and a lot of different things. The only other aspect I want to bring up is something I've talked about a lot, which is individualization of, you know, I think we're at the point with technology, I mean, we don't have to rely on having 30 kids in the classroom in order to do some kind of, you know, in order to do an AP class. You know, if there's 2 kids that want to do AP whatever, you know, we should find a way to accommodate that and be able to accommodate that at an uncompromising excellent standard. And we have to be able to adjust to that because I think that's really where we're at now. We can, you know, the model of shoving 30 kids in the same information, it doesn't work. And we should be able to individualize our instruction much, much more as kids go through our system and take advantage of them reaching their full potential in the areas that they have interest in, whether that's, you know, using ROP, whether that's using, you know, ROP already has some articulation agreements, you know, for higher, for AA degrees and things like that you can use. But, I mean, whatever it is, we have to find a way to accommodate the individual student to reach their capacity because there's, like I said, I just don't think the cookie cutter thing works anymore or should work anymore. There's no excuse for that. So that's the only thing. I don't see the word individualized in there, you know.
You know, a lot technology.
But a lot of
we know those objectives.
A lot of these, obviously, if you're active, you know, they become individualized. You know, because people, if they do something hands-on, people choose to do different things and stuff. And so, the other thing is, I'm a little worried about the science part of it, not just because science freaks me out. No, electricity, what? But is because the state has focused so much on English and math. And those standards, you know, they haven't been testing, you know, science as much and focusing on it as much. And so there's a lot of the STEM curricula where resources may not have been devoted to it in the past because it wasn't a focus of the state and funding. And, you know, we all had the remedial English. You know, we were doing two periods of English, you know, for kids that weren't meeting the English standard, right? You know, so they could pass Casey. But, you know, you can register from high school, you know, not know anything about, you know, science. You know, because Casey didn't test that. And so, you know, I don't know how much it costs to come up to speed when we've had, you know, I don't think we were doing remedial science. We're doing 2 things of science classes. Were people getting that? No. Mm-hmm. You know, because they didn't have to pass the test in order to get out of high school. And so we have to figure out how we catch up on all those aspects that haven't been the focus of a lot of the state resources in the past. So, because that's a struggle, too. They're important, but struggle. And then the last thing is just the integration. You know, like, I don't know what a good example is, but science. You know, we would know nothing about space if somebody didn't decide to fund it somewhere. You know, and so that got into the social sciences of it, or the economics of it. You know, there's a lot of cross integration that's not just segmented in a silo. A lot of it crosses. And I don't know how we STEM just, you know, you have the image of just a STEM. It's really, there's so many, so much integration with that. There's so many different aspects. And I don't know how we try to incorporate that.
Actually, if I could interject, with the next generation science center just came out in April, it does integrate a lot of the social science, a lot of the language arts, a lot of the mathematics, so it does have a lot of Common Core. So it does work well with that. And it's a lot of what we see in Common Core with kind of skills of articulation, communication, all those. It's embedded in the next generation of science, and they just came out in April. So okay. It does attack that.
Yeah, because all, but it's not just that. I mean, everything's like that. Everything.
Because people think engineer, like an engineer, no, it's more of the thought process.
Yeah, right.
Or mathematics. No, it's a well-rounded, more kind of not just here memorize this concept. It's more of working and building upon the knowledge in kindergarten through fifth grade.
Right.
So it does address those.
Yeah. Okay. So, anyways, those are just my thoughts. But like I said, this is the most comprehensive thing that I've seen ever on the board. As far as a planning document, and so I appreciate the efforts I've put into it. And, you know, if we do half of it, maybe
ambitious.
We'll be so much better off. You know, I told you that too every once in a while when you send go, this is what my goals and what I'm going to try to do. Man, if we only do a 10% of that, we're way ahead. But, you know, if we can accomplish this with that and overlay it with our hiring and overlay it with our funding priorities, you know, I think all those things are important.
Shoemaker.
I again want to thank everybody who did work on this. The board met for a special board meeting to come up with the district goals and the mission statement, so I can't imagine having to meet more than once to have developed all of these goals. They are very impressive. The only question I have for you and what I would like to see as it comes up from the schools, and I don't know if this is what's going to happen, where we started with our mission statement and our goals, and we've been narrowing it by expanding into the action plans. I would like to see when we get the action plans from the schools, for example, we have research and identify community resources under STEM. I would like to see in the action plans for the schools how they are going to do that. Just because we've given you the outline. We don't need to hear again, we're going to do this. I would like to see the actual concrete steps on what they're going to do. And then I would also, if possible, this may not be possible the first year, to sort of see how the action plans at the elementary schools are aligning to meet where they need to be for the middle schools and then for the high schools. And so we can see the straight line to meet our ultimate goals. So.
And that's the purpose. We had a hard time when we were working on our action plan wanting to get down to the nitty-gritty, and we had to pull back because each school is going to decide the nitty-gritty or each department. And so it was much more fun to go into the nitty-gritty, but we had to pull back and say, no, let the schools do this. Let's figure out the first year because we want to get the same buy-in. So I think what you're asking is what our plan is.
Another example is we are going to increase A through G course offerings. So at the high schools, I want to see how they're going to do that. Or if we say we're going to increase the number of students who are taking AP courses, how are we going to do that? Is it increased just 1%, or are we aiming for 10% more students?
On the conversation, just to share, that came up on that as well, is you can't increase kids in high school in these courses if we don't prepare them at K-8.
Exactly.
So those were the kind of conversations we had. When we started that particular objective, it was just about the high school. But if you look at the action steps, it really talks about what we need to do at the elementary and middle school to prepare those kids so when they get into high school, they're able to take those kinds of courses. So good conversation.
Did you have another comment?
We had CAVA come out, I believe it was CAVA, and they also sell curriculum. And they talked about selling their science curriculum, and I'm sure other people do this, to the K-8, because they said those teachers, really K-6, because they don't have the background. They're taught to teach all of the courses, and there's not a lot of time designated to science. But what I liked about it is they had an online class. And so the teacher was the facilitator in the classroom, but it wasn't actually doing the instruction, and then it came with the packets. And it was pricey. But when we're talking, I've heard, well, some of these teachers don't, they feel uncomfortable doing this. If we can look at maybe other ways where maybe they aren't teaching it, there is maybe one great teacher in our district. I'm looking at one. Miss Majori, I mean, I know that she did some great things in science every time that she was really innovative, and she had fun with it. So if maybe she would want it, or somebody else in the district who's really good at that kind of thing, could actually do the teaching, and we could have the packets together, and the teacher would feel really comfortable following those steps at the beginning. And I don't know, but I've heard several people say that this is really hard. But I was really impressed, and I think they did something on how to grow a seed, and they brought little packets.
The nice thing about that is STEM is such a national focus right now. I think every other email I get is about materials that are out there for STEM education, so I think there's going to be some great resources.
I'm retired superintendent of science.
Huh?
So I'm retired superintendent of science.
So I agree with you that's going to be an important step.
Okay, wow. I am so excited. I am really excited. It was such a joy to go through this. Thank you, thank you, thank you, all of you. When I first came on the board, this was a huge goal, and to see so many people involved in the process, so many people excited about it, the fact that we intend this to be a living, breathing, fluid document that's going to be quite organic and that we're going to get updates, I am super excited. And I can already see in many of your classrooms going to your open houses that you're integrating many of these things already. I am so thrilled. And I thank you for your leadership on this, because you took it to a whole other place where we knew it needed to get to, but we didn't know how to do that. So thank you so much. And for all of you who stepped up to the plate, because this was a lot of work. It was extra work. It was above and beyond what each of you is doing. So I thank you for that from the bottom of my heart. And more importantly, the kids. We're going to see the fruits of that through the students and the learning. And I'm so glad that, yes, we're going back to 8th grade, and we're going back to the elementaries, and even more exciting is how unified I see the district. Every level is coming together. It's not functioning in silos. You know, we're actually living up to that unified school district, so thank you so much for that. I also was really pleased to see, as I was reading through this, I must share with you all, and for some of you this will resonate, and for others who are very outgoing and boisterous, like, you know, Mr. Spence and I, and everyone, I didn't realize the importance of acknowledging and affirming students who are a little quieter, a little shyer. Quiet Revolution, we had her speak in San Francisco, and I was so happy to see that in addition to group work, there's going to be the opportunity for individualized work. I had no idea how many of our inventors, our great thinkers, our creators were introverts, quiet people who observed, who took it in, worked with it, and then brought it back out. And if we force those kids to do this big, noisy group work, then we could be eliminating a lot of creativity. So I'm glad to see that it was acknowledged group and individual work. So I'm really pleased about that stuff. What I tell you, right? Outgoing, boisterous, right? So he's an introvert. So I thank you, all of you, for that, too, because you considered that, and it was in here. And that was a big paradigm shift for me. As I went to that conference, and I started to ask people who are a little more introverted, and yes, they do sit, and they too contemplate, and they do amazing work, and I wasn't acknowledging that as someone who's in the education community, so thank you for acknowledging that in our strategic plan. So thank you, thank you, thank you. This is an information report, so we do not have to vote on anything. I also echo what Mr. Spence said, and that was to finally bring everything together. We're going to bring our spending together, our curriculum together, our hiring together, our planning together. It's all going to come together, and I'm really thrilled about that. So thank you, all of you, for being here with us, on a Tuesday night till 9:30. I applaud your work. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
I just want to add that we have some amazing educators in this district,
And when last summer, when Tandy and Ellie and I sat down with our focus areas and tried to think about what it would look like, we kind of came up with our own objectives just to kind of get a handle on it. Nothing compares to the work that you folks did.
Yes.
And it was an honor to be a part of this with all of you, to get to know you and to work with you. And I want to thank Tandy and Ellie for your leadership, but I also want to thank all of you who participated and gave of your time, because it's a quality document, and it's because of you.
Standing O for me. Thank you. Okay, item number 13. Their discussion on item number 13, proposed job description. Ms. Poulos.
I had talked to Debbie about the cost. It was like, it says $50 an hour, and then, but and she explained to me that this was going to be our employee, but it was going to be like employees we had from the SELPA in the past, and that it was reimbursed to us.
Mm-hmm. It's no cost to the district.
But on the fiscal impact, it says to be determined, and I just want to make sure then, on the cover page on 13, that says zero. That it will.
There will be no fiscal impact.
Right, because.
Fiscal impact should say it will be cost neutral. Will be cost neutral to the district. We can change that.
And that means being cost neutral, that it
means
will
that
not
the total expense.
Anything in addition, it's already what we pay to the SELPA.
Whatever it costs us to pay out this salary, the SELPA will reimburse us. Thank you. Good point.
Okay. I will move this. That was my my only question that hadn't been answered prior to this.
Okay, it has been moved by Ms. Tammy Poulos and seconded by Ms. Jessica Shoemaker to approve for first and second reading the revised job descriptions for the position of SELPA Private School Management Information System Specialist as presented. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Carries 5-0. Okay, that takes us to any board discussion?
And that is, I appreciate the information in our packet showing that there were individuals that were placed outside the salary schedule and we hired them for different positions. So appreciate that information. One thing, because it shows that we have done it in the past, and but one of the things that troubled me was that there apparently were payments being made to individuals that weren't brought to the board for approval. And one of them's still going on, and that has to stop. And I don't know, I'd like to have agendized what our recourse is for those payments that were made during the time period a few years ago when those were authorized, because I think we should see at least what our options are of recovering those funds. But the one that we're currently still paying has to stop. I mean, it never came to the board for approval, and even though it was authorized 3 years ago, you know, unilaterally by a superintendent, that's not a valid a payment because it never came to the board. It's just, it shouldn't have been allowed, and it's wrong, and it needs to stop.
Okay. So we can bring it to, yes, Ms. Shoemaker, board discussion.
I also had a couple of questions on the list of names we were given, so it may need to be agendized for closed session to discuss those issues, because obviously we can't discuss specific employees at this point. I was happy to also see that in the past, when, at least on the list I can see, when we've had people working outside, they were getting, for the most part, stipends, which is what we suggested that brought up this question to begin with. And so I guess I'll look forward to the discussion at the next meeting.
In closed session.
Yes.
Okay, any other board discussion?
Okay.
Dates to remember: May 29th, the open house at Merced. May 30th, open house at West Cove at 6 p.m. Which June 6th, West Covina High School graduation at 7 o'clock at Thyberg Field. June 7th, last day of school. In addition, we have all of our three middle school promotions all at 9 o'clock. I will be going to Holland Crest. So each of you, I don't know, it's June 7th, Friday. And at 6 o'clock on the 7th, we have Coronado's graduation, which we will see Catherine there. And our next Board of Education is June the 11th. There being no further business to come before the board, the regular meeting of May 28th is adjourned at 9:32 p.m. Thank you.